파이트리
스와세야
프리티아르탐
탓
고트라스야타 반다바 아피메 바가반 프리타
Krishna
Pandusuta
Priya Krishna Pandusuta Priya
Prashvasye Paitri Svasye Yapritiartham
Paitri Svasye Yapritiartham
Tad Gotrasyata Bandha Abhime Bhagavan Prita Krishna Pandusuta Priya
Krishna Pandusuta Priya
Paitri Svasye Paitri Svasye Yapritiartham
Paitri Svasye Yapritiartham
Tadgotrasyata Bandhava
Tadgotrasyata Bandhava
Ahime Bhagavan Prita
Ahime Bhagavan Prita
Krishna Pandusuta Priya
Krishna Pandusuta Priya
Paitri Svasye Yapritiartham
Paitri Svasye Yapritiartham
Tadgotrasyata Bandhava
Tadgotrasyata Bandhava Ahime Bhagavan Prita
Krishna Pandu Sutta Priya
Krishna Pandu Sutta Priya
Paitri Svasya Prityartham
Paitri Svasya Prityartham
Tato Trasya Tapandhava
Tato Trasya Tapandhava
Ahime Bhagavan Prita
Ahime Bhagavan Prita
Krishna
Pandusuta Priya
Maitri Svasyaya Prityartam
Maitri Svasyaya Prityartam
Tarko Trasyata Vandava
Tarko Trasyata Vandava
Abhime Bhagavan Prita
Abhime Bhagavan Prita
Krishna Pandusuta Priya
Krishna Pandusuta Priya
Tarko
Trasyata Pandava
Ahime
Shri-Deva-Bhavan-Vita.
Krishna-Pandu-Sutapriya.
Adi-Svase-Yavi-Vyartam. Tadotasya-Tabandavam.
Api.
Definitely.
May unto me.
Bhagavan.
The personality of Godhead.
Prita.
Pleased.
Krishna.
The Lord.
Pandusuta.
The sons of King Pandu.
Priya.
Dear.
Paitri.
In relation with the father.
Svasyeya.
The sons of the sister.
Priti.
Satisfaction.
Artham.
In the matter of.
Tat. There.
Gotrasya.
Of the descendant.
Atha.
Accepted.
Bandhava.
As a friend.
Translation. Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is very dear to the sons of King Pandu, has accepted me as one of those relatives just to please his great cousins and brothers. Purport. A pure and exclusive devotee of the Lord, his family or dexterity than others, who are attached to illusory family affairs. Only people are attached to family matters, and the whole economic impetus of human society is moving under the influence of family affection. Such deluded persons have no information. One can render better service to the family by becoming a devotee of the Lord. The Lord gives special protection to the family members and descendants of a devotee, even though such members are themselves non-devotees. Maharaj Pallad was a great devotee of the Lord, but his father, Hiranyakashipu, was a great atheist and declared enemy of the Lord. But despite all this, Hiranyakashipu was awarded salvation due to his being the father of Maharaj Prahlad. The Lord is so kind that he gives all protection to the family members of his devotee, and thus the devotee has no need to bother about his family members, even if one leaves such family members aside to discharge devotional service. Maharaj Yudhishthira and his brothers were the sons of Kunti, the paternal aunt of Lord Krishna, and Maharaj Parikit admits the patronage of Lord Krishna because of his being the only grandson of the great Pandavas. So Krishna, in expanding living entities, then these living entities are all complete. Every living entity is complete. He is the complete whole, so everything expanding from him is complete. And also we see is then expanding from him, because he's non-different from his energies, what expands from his energies is also complete. Right? So this creates something very nice, and from this, then there's very nice interaction. Very important here is to see the interaction. Otherwise, why would he be mentioning relative and personal relationships? Krishna is expanding as the Sarup Shakti. The Sarup Shakti expands all the other personalities of the energy. But even she herself appreciates the service of each and every one of those expansions. Does that make some sense? Right? So, it's her, but at the same time it's different. Right? Because everything expanding from Krishna is perfect and complete. So the living entities are complete. So they're conscious. So even though they're part and parcel, they're still conscious of Krishna. And they're separate where they can themselves perfectly be conscious. Does it make sense? Even though they're expanding from. So that is the interesting element of this whole process. Do we have another seat for Maharaj?
Well, if people move up, more people can come up.
Yeah. So this is a very important thing, because the tattva is not to create a dryness. It's not just for intellectual stimulation. It's to engage the intellect, but that's not its purpose. It's to appreciate the situation in which relationships go on. Sambandha is sambandha gyan. Right, so all the jnana aspects are technically sambandha. Right, that's what they are. Anything where you're establishing Krishna's position, the living entity, the material energy, any of Krishna's energies, it's all sambandha. Right, whether it's what he does, what he can do, you know, his qualities, anything, name, form, qualities, pastimes, it's being described in relationship to the position. Right, and from position, then you can establish relationship. If you don't know who you are or who someone else is, you can't establish a position. Establish a relationship like that. Someone was telling me that previously the formality of relationships in Japan, that the first thing when two gentlemen meet and they don't know each other is they have kind of like sets of questions that they ask to establish who's in what's position, because it's very important to them who's higher, who's equal, who's junior, and all that. So they have a standard set of questions, ways that they exchange. Like we say, hi, how are you? That's the Western. So in Japan, that's a no-no. You never ask, how are you? It's the number one thing you don't ask, because if they're so thoughtful that they'll think, well, actually, you know, it was a bad day at the office, and, you know, got stuck in a jam and this, and I got bills to pay. They'll just have a emotional meltdown. So they never ask that. Talk about whether, you know, position is that, until they figure out who's who, and then they know who's supposed to bow lower and who's supposed to say what and deal and all that. So knowledge is to establish relationship. That's its purpose. It doesn't have any other purpose. It can be used by those attached to gyan to enhance their intellectual taste. You know, it's there, just like activity is only supposed to be rendered to Krishna and the devotees. But it can be used for your own, you know, position. That's the free will. So actually, these things of knowledge are only to establish how special it is that Krishna is a person, has expanded, and his expansions have expanded, and each one of them has great appreciation and affection for the other. It's not because it's my expansion, therefore I'm in charge. No, that's not. Because we see as if someone needs you, as someone's dependent upon you, then that makes for, if someone's pious, it makes for a nicer, closer, more intimate relationship. Right? If piety is less, then it makes for more of a Machiavellian kind of relationship. Right? But the actual principle is to create the closeness, create personal interaction. So here, Parikshit Maharaj, he is marveling at this fact that Krishna, even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just to please his aunt and cousins, well, then he's kind to him, because he's the grandchild. Right? So then it's all very, very nice. So he has a relationship with him in that way, takes care of him, because he being the grandchild, then naturally he'll get more attention, more care, more kindness than even the own son, like that. So this is nice. So then, here Prabhupada's pointing at the pure and exclusive devotee. It means someone who is dedicated just to pleasing the Lord. Then here it serves his family interests more dexterously than others. So the prominent point of this, there's a primary and a secondary. The primary, yeah, because he's saying others are attached, they're not actually serving very well. This is a highly politically incorrect purport. Like that. This will not fly with the karmis and probably with the majority of devotees. But taking the risk, because Prabhupada's written it, we will speak on the point. That, here he's bringing out, because the idea in the material world is because of attachment, everything works better. But somehow or another, God's opinion is opposite. God maintains everything, takes care of everything, down to the last little ant. And the point he makes in Gita is he's not attached. That's why you can do it. Because if you're attached, you have the inspiration to work. You have the need to work. But your vision is clouded that you actually don't know fully how to work. Right? Due to your own attachment, own needs, own desires, you don't actually necessarily see what is the ultimate benefit for the other person. This is the point. It's just because of attachment you can't function. Someone was telling me the other day also in business is the difference between the salesperson who can sell anything. You would think he's the Vaishya. No, he's not. Because he's being paid. Because he cannot take the risk. The businessman is the one who's willing to take the risk. That's the difference between the dvijas and the shudras. The dvijas in the area of economics, influence, and knowledge are willing to take the risk. The shudras aren't. So they're maintained on a regular, steady, stable income. Right? So that point of the risk, how do you say, that makes the difference. Unfortunately, in establishing this point so nicely, I forgot where I started from. Why I was establishing it. Attachment, yeah. Then it was attachment into this. Oh, okay, yes, that's it. So, that's the point. Because of attachment, if you're too attached, you can't do business. Because you can't spend the money. You can't buy. What if it doesn't work? You just have to be able to, you know, this is the way it is. This is the duty. Spend it. I make money? Great. I don't make money? What happened? What to do? Right? Person gave the example. You want to do business? You have to be willing to stand at the window of your second floor and take, you know, rupee notes and just toss them out the window and not worry about it. You know? Because that's what it means. You spend the money, maybe you'll make, maybe you'll lose. But it's your business. Does this make sense? Like that. So it's a very, very subtle point. So because the devotee, so the main application of that is because the devotee is attached to Krishna, then they're always engaged in Krishna's service. And because one therefore becomes dear to Krishna, anything in connection to you becomes dear to Krishna. That's the main point. That's the primary. Because we're connected to Krishna, things go nicely for even the family members who are non-devotees. We have no interaction with, no connection with. But because they're connected, Krishna takes care. That's what Prabhupada mentions, that the devotee, then he, how do you say, saves about 10 generations before, 10 generations after. So the 10 generations after haven't even appeared yet, right? Krishna's already taken care of them, right? And the 10 generations before. And what's interesting is I'd heard in one lecture, Prabhupada defines that 10 before. It's not 10 in a straight line, because according to the Shraddha rites, you, your father, grandfather, and I think up to great-grandfather, as far back as it goes. The Shraddha writes, you're not obliged to do anything farther back than that. There's 3 cakes offered, and that's it. So that's all there is. So what he's saying is that it's who you know in this life. Like if you know your father and grandfather, then that's two. Then in your last life, then who you know, your father, grandfather, great-grandfather, like this, and it goes back to 10 generations. So it's also still personal that it's who you know. It's not just, you don't know who is 10 before, who's 10 after. It means if you appeared again, who you would know in that life appeared again, like that, until you have 10 generations. So this is the, so even then, it's still personal. It's still relationship, like that. So this is the one. Is so, because the devotee is dear to the Lord, everything connected to him is dear. That's a natural principle, right? That's how you can tell affection. Like you see someone likes a person but doesn't like, you know, aspects around them. They like them, don't like their house, or like them, don't like their, you know, family. Like that. It's not that close. But when it's connected to them, I think there's a, I don't know if they still use it now, but there's a old, you know, an American saying of, any friend of yours is a friend of mine, or like that. You know, it's just automatic. You know, you're my friend, so if he's your friend, he must be okay, like that. I don't know if they still use it these days. Old archaic concept, you know, like that. So that's one aspect. Another is it serves the family interest. Because of the detachment, they can actually do what's right for the family. They can actually interact, do what's good for the family. Because otherwise, the attachment may cloud. Sometimes by that desire, it makes it very clear. One works very hard. You know, especially when it comes to feeding, clothing, the health, those kind of things, the attachment works to great advantage. But sometimes, culturally and spiritually, it's a disadvantage. It may work. If one's values are so strong in that way, it may work. If it's not, it may not. Like you see so many times, the parent has a desire that the child will be successful, and they push them to the point where the child commits suicide. And they can't figure out what went wrong. We were just trying to help Johnny, you know? Like that. Huh? Yeah. So it's, that's the thing. Or the child rejects, or so many different things. It's not an uncommon principle, especially nowadays, as you see the attachments not being regulated by culture, that more and more children are finding difficulty in relating to the family members. Because, not because of just who they are, but because of the attachments that they impose upon the children. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that the attachments are bad, but because the attachment is there, attachment develops impatience, right? When there's a desire, you have tolerance. But as soon as the desire becomes a need, there's no tolerance. It has to happen yesterday. So because of that, then Johnny's not becoming, you know, a PhD in medicine fast enough. You know, he's already 13, you know, it's moving on. You know, why hasn't, you know, the Harvard School of Medicine admitted him yet? You know, it's like that. So it's a problem because of that. So that's why in the Vedic culture, then this point of being attached to Krishna and therefore detached from material need is so much emphasized. And because of that, one can do it properly. Because of attachment, Arjuna could not perform his duties as a Kshatriya. Because of attachment, Dhritarashtra could not perform his duties properly as a king. Right? But when, in knowledge, Arjuna understood his proper relationship with Krishna and therefore with everyone else, then, in that mood of detachment, then he's performing his duties properly. Right? It's a very important point. Difficulty comes is because our modern definition of detachment means repulsion. And because of this improper definition, it creates an obstacle in our applying it in our life. Because if I'm detached, means I'm repulsed, means I don't deal with it. I've heard so many times when I bring up the point of detachment, naishkarmi, which the whole Gita is about, And devotees just start standing up and yelling and screaming. I'm not joking. Yelling, you, we've heard you, detachment, that's how you destroyed our society. It's very amazing to watch. All you're saying is, do it connected to Krishna. It's not that because it's burning in you, because it's, you know, it's your, you know, car, or your money, or your wife, or, therefore that's the only reason you function. That's not very good. Little kids are just attached. No knowledge, just attached. Can they do anything nicely? Think about it. No. So they can throw tantrums, they can yell and scream, they can try to do something, it doesn't work. When does it start working? The more they get knowledge, the more they understand their position, the more they control and focus their needs and apply, then they get the better result. Right? That's how it functions. So elevation is through detachment. And degradation is through attachment. Even on the gross, mundane platform. Right? Hiranyakashipu, he's given an example here. Biggest, baddest, grossest materialist that the universe has ever known. Right? Like that. But still, he could send his child away to school. Because he knows that on the material platform, this is the best thing he can do. I will get the best mundane result by sending my kid to these teachers. Right? He could leave all his facility and sense enjoyment that he had in the palace and go with his brother to the forest for austerity. Because he knows, I'm going to get more out of this. Right? So it's even the grossest materialists who have intelligence, because he was smart, knows that the element of detachment is necessary for appreciating the facilities that come from attachment. Right? That's the thing. The problem is because the living entity is attached, because it's energy, it's Shakti, it doesn't make sense. Right? It makes sense to Krishna, because he is detached. And he therefore comes as Lord Chaitanya to appreciate attachment. But the living entity is attached. But because they have to transfer that attachment to the spiritual, right? Then they have to use detachment. Right? Because you have to detach from one and attach to another. Now, why would that be the method? Why wouldn't it just be straight attachment? Why wouldn't we just bother, okay, we're attached to this and just we're attached to Krishna without any detachment? That's because we're taking on the mood of the Purusha. Right? We're thinking we're the man here. Right? We're the controller and enjoyer. So controller and enjoyer, which is Krishna, he's detached. Right? So, Prabhupada mentions, the cure for the disease is the same as what caused the disease. Right? The thorn takes out the thorn. So our Purusha Bhav is what keeps us here. So therefore we're going to use the Purusha Bhav to be detached, and that's going to pull out the thorn of material attachment. And then by cultivating the positive aspects of Krishna consciousness, that will create the natural attachment that the living entity has to Krishna. And then we'll be able to be situated in Krishna consciousness. Does that make some sense? Any comments or questions? Yes.
Can you elaborate on how we can use the Purusha Bhava to detachment?
How do we use the Purusha Bhav? No, what I'm saying is because we have the Purusha Bhav, then the Purusha is detached. So therefore, since we're claiming to be God, okay, then do it. But in a positive way, not in that. We're using the Purusha Bhav to be attached. But the Purusha is detached. Therefore, he can interact with everything exactly, perfectly how it's supposed to do. You want to interact with somebody, you want to be with them, but if you project too much onto it, more than what the situation is, it'll ruin it. Or if you don't project enough. You know what I'm saying? So due to attachment, then you want more out of it than the situation allows. Or due to the opposite of the attachment, you know, the repulsion, then you put in less than the situation warrants. Right? So only if you're actually detached, that this is just what you're supposed to do. This is the proper way of dealing with people in this situation. I'm supposed to be in this situation. This is how you're supposed to deal. Right? Then you can exactly tell what it is, because we may have our pre-planned idea, but it doesn't work like that. If the pre-planned idea was the perfection, then why does God use Yoga Maya on himself? Because he could sit down and when he, you know, wakes up, for eternity he could already work out exactly what he's going to be doing and where he's going to go and all. But he leaves it to Yoga Maya. So, therefore, then the Purusha is the one who is adjusting with the situation. Right? It's the Prakriti that makes the plan. Right? That's God's enjoyment, going along with the plan of the Prakriti. Does that make sense? So that works really great in the spiritual world, because it's very clear who's the Purusha, who's the Prakriti. So we're, here, everybody is Purusha and everybody's Prakriti. So they're all attached because they're all Prakriti. Same time, they're all trying to be Purusha. So that means everybody's got to be sensitive to what is their duties and what applies to the other people. That's why duties are pressed so much. It's not duties for doing something you don't want to do. You know, that's the common thing, is you know, it's your duty, Prabhu, or you know, like that, or that kind of stuff. It works great for management, but we're talking relationship, we're talking developing God, we're talking about going back to Godhead. So there, the duty is, what is our duty? Ultimate duty to Godhead, and then ultimate, what, how to engage our conditioned nature in service. Right? Because we're coming from a previously attached situation. It's already created the situation. So unlimited situations are there. It doesn't matter to Krishna. You just engage that in his service. Right? It's all part of his interaction. Does that make some sense?
So
we don't use the Purusha Bhav. It's because we've taken the mood of Purusha, then it behooves us to take up the mentality of the Purusha to act according to what's right. Krishna, when he comes to the material world, he just does his duties, what he's supposed to do. So if you want to move with Krishna, right, means you move in a circle if you have the same mentality. You can be, that was Prabhupada's point, you can be friends if you're equals. Right? So he had become bewildered by his position and all that. They were equals in that they were both students in their guru's ashram. Him and Dronacharya. You know? Like that. And they shared so many things. So they had so much in common in that way. But he was simply looking at it, I'm very rich and powerful and you're a poor Brahmin who's coming to me. How can we be friends? He had, you know, due to his attachment, he had lost the understanding. So the point is, this equals. So,
question on which
question. Oh, okay. Is the, so among equals you can be friends. So if Krishna, moving in the material world, is detached and performs his duties, then if we want to move in his circle, we have to perform our duties in a detached way. Right? But we see how it is the relationships work fine. Detached means the result. The relationships are 100% intact, right? But the Western, or it's not Western, it's everybody, but it's especially strong in the West, the baby in bathwater principle. If there's anything wrong with anything, there's, you know, a little speck of dirt in the baby's bathwater, then the baby and the bathwater and the tub go out the window, like that. You know, so that's a problem. The point is the duties are done, the detachment is there, and the relationships stay perfectly intact. That takes work. No one likes to work, right? The American idea is the maverick. There's no reason. Just somehow or another, he's just the bozo guy, you know, this and that, and
you know, happy-go-lucky or spaced out, and then, you know, something happens, and then, bang, the next thing, he's this top crack commando guy that, you know, even the, you know, SAS or the Green Beret couldn't do what he does, right? One guy goes in, wiped out battalions, and does this and that, and, you know, it's like that. And it's all, it sounds great. People love it. They pay, you know, top rupee, you know, to watch these movies. But that's okay. But the reality is it takes work. You know, you got the 1 minute manager, you know. So it's like, great, if in 1 minute I can learn how to manage, you know, that's great. But it's, the point is that we need to practice. Sadhana bhakti means we practice. So we have to be able to practice keeping all the relationships proper and all the etiquette right, performing all the duties that we're supposed to do, but with the mood that I'm not doing it to please myself, I'm doing it to please Krishna, Guru, and the Vaishnavas. Is that okay? Then it works. Such a devotee, then Krishna himself takes care.
Okay. You could also.
Couldn't. Okay, so the question was this about the past, referring to detachment being applied in the wrong way so that people renounce their families even though their families are Krishna conscious. So, early when Prabhupada was here, then that would be. There wasn't much of a family developed. You know, you'd have two people that didn't have any children and didn't have any house or any place. They just lived in the temple. So that would be more for establishing the movement. And in the early days, up to 73, then the positions of both worked very nicely. After that, there was a little bit more of a duality was created. So what happens is that this is also very... This is also an ununderstood aspect of the process, is that when you have knowledge means you apply it in where you are working. It doesn't necessarily mean that it is realization. Right? It means we read Bhagavatam, we read Gita, we know family life is Maya, whether they're Krishna conscious or not. Why is the family there? Because the souls aren't family members. You know, you don't have a soul as a husband, soul as a wife, soul as a kid, soul as a dog. Does that make sense? We're talking intellectual here. Leave the emotions out of it at this
knowledge
point.
Knowledge without a practical application.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the point is then that it is Maya. It means the whole material world is Maya. So the idea is that if you want realization, you have to have knowledge of the actual position of something. Then by working with it in a favorable way and in a complete way, then you actually get realization. Does that make some sense? So what has happened is devotees have misunderstood a deeper understanding of the theoretical knowledge for realization. So they would be interacting with the family, something would go wrong, or they read something in the books. They would see that they would actually understand the material element of it, the Maya of it, and that understanding they would mistake for realization. Because only realization is value, and only value you can actually act upon. Therefore, then, in that position, though its purpose was for a higher development, unfortunately, then the qualification for it, due to lack of realization, only a, you know, either solid understanding or even sometimes just a temporary understanding, it comes in an emotional moment and then goes away later. Then they would give up the family, but they still, in their own mentality, still had the value of family interaction. So they hadn't seen, so even though the elements of the family and its interaction they could understand by knowledge was not transcendental. But they could not, they had not gone to the point of the root of it that they needed family interaction. Like that. Because you have the, you have basically, just in, just for simplicity, two levels of dealing with. One is what you know in this lifetime, right? The second would be what's there since time immemorial, right? So one has a family this lifetime because of the primordial material need for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So one may by knowledge see that, okay, there's problems with this family, but it doesn't mean that they've given up the actual need for family. So because of that, then they'll give up the family and then have problem and later on go back or start a new family. You know. So that would be, you know, why it's going on. This doesn't say it's good or bad. I'm just saying that this is, because the question was there, is why would it happen? You know, technically why it would happen. So now the other point comes up is that if one actually does have the value, does have the realization that it's unimportant to them. But if the situation is favorable for themselves, other family members, the relationship is still good, then even though that realization has happened, let's say at an earlier age, you know, they've just in theory, let's say that they have been married in their early 20s, and then in their mid-late 30s, early 40s, they understand that, yes, it's not important, and I don't have a need for it. But, you know, the relationship with the family is dynamic, it's good, it's Krishna conscious, it's favorable. Someone who's actually on that platform, it doesn't matter whether they're in family life or not. So there's no need to leave it. Does that make sense? If it's favorable, no need to leave. If it's unfavorable, yeah, why stay? Because you don't need it, it's not favorable, why stay? You don't need it, but it's a favorable situation to perform Krishna consciousness, then what's the problem? You know, so then only, even though it's favorable, then you might consider when you hit the 50s, because that's what the Shastra recommends, that's just the social function, and that creates the, you know, the whole social body. And you have the different orders, so then you free some very qualified grihasthas to still be able to function within the grihastha scene very intimately, but in a more, they don't have their own, you know, needs to take care of. Now they can take care of the community. That's what the vanaprasthas are for. It's mentioned the vanaprasthas cannot go deep into the forest like the sannyasis. They have to be available to the younger grihastha community. So it's just a natural position. Then if it's been favorable with the wife and that, then he can, with the wife, they can together travel and do their activities. If it's favorable, but it's more favorable for the wife to be with the children because of just her mentality and needs, then she can be there. You know, so it's got a lot of variety of what's there. Difficulty comes is for preaching then, in the past we've used the sannyasa ashram as the main thing, but vanaprastha is a good platform, but especially it's important for social development. That hasn't been seen. Like that means that's one of the weaknesses that we'll have in the society. We don't have seniors who are senior but can function within the grihastha, circle. Sannyasis are senior but don't function in that circle. You know, brahmachari is a junior. You know, so, you know, rare you get a brahmachari, then the grihastha's respect and it works fine. But the vanaprasthas is the natural place for someone to be on the edge, but at the same time be able to give great benefit. So as that ashram is developed and respected, then you'll see socially the society will function better. Spiritually, that's another thing, but socially it will function better. Because spiritually, any member of the society can make it work right. Does that make sense? Like that. Is that okay? Is that
answer? Yeah, I mean, you mentioned if the family is favorable to Krishna consciousness, or if that whole relationship is favorable, but favorable, that's so subjective, because sometimes we see devotees who you know, maybe there's always some sort of material disagreement between the husband and wife or whatnot. And so devotees will take that superficially as, well, you know, this isn't helping my Krishna consciousness, when it's really just a minor, issue.
Mm-hmm.
So they immediately reject the family.
Yeah, but that means the point of that, they have a difficulty in the family relationship, so they reject. That just brings out the aspect of the knowledge. My point is if the realization is not there, then there'll be no advantage to acting on it in the point that it's not favorable and one leaves. Because the point is if one is on that detached level, one can understand how much is beneficial and not. And also, generally, it would function like this. If the husband is actually has that kind of understanding, is detached, that will make the wife more attached. So she'll be much more careful to see that nothing goes wrong. Like that. You know, like that. So then it would be seen that it's much more clear that if and despite that still things go wrong, means the lady is not really trying hard and it's not going to really work. Because the normal thing is when there's detachment, there's attachment. You understand? The energies. When one moves, the other follows. You know, it's just like if the boy is more interested to gain something from the girl takes the relaxes and pulls back. She doesn't have to endeavor. But as soon as he kind of goes, oh well, and then starts to move, and it's, hey, you know, that's just the way relationships work. So if he is actually detached, but performing his duties, then it's very comfortable, very pleasant. One feels completely supported because the dutifulness is there. One's detached, so one will do the duties, whether it's nice or not. But at the same time, as all the symptoms are there of attachment, that the duties are being performed, proper interaction is there, but at the same time, it can be understood that there is a detachment. Therefore, if it is seen that the thing is not 100% theirs, a girl will always endeavor. When it's 100% theirs, that's when they relax, and, you know, then it's take it for granted. So if that's there, the detachment, then that always keeps, there's always a slight little bit of guessing. Everything's there. The man's taking care, all facilities, he's saying how much she's important and all that, but still there's something there that it's not, he's not quite, she doesn't have him. So therefore, there's always the endeavor to be at her best. Then, so even there, we see is this detachment aspect creates the best family situation, because the chase is always more interesting than, you know, once the hunt's over. So if it's done right, you know, from the date of marriage up until sannyas, it's a chase. But it's all done very nicely, so it's everybody gets completely satisfied that what they want is gained. So that's the thing, is it's such a complex mix of psychology and balance in it. It's not so cut and dry. So we're simply making these statements in this way and strongly so that devotees will become aware of what they're actually dealing with. You know, it's not just because we grew up, you know, and we had a family, we know what one is. Or we've hit puberty, therefore we know what, you know, desire is. Or we're married, therefore we know what grihastha life is. Or we've had a child, therefore we know how to raise them. You know, these are natural illusions of the living entity. They have to be there. Because if they weren't there, if everybody was in perfect knowledge, there wouldn't be anybody here in the material world. Right? But they wouldn't be in the spiritual world. Because they don't have attachment to Krishna, but they don't have attachment to Maya, then you have all these unlimited frustrated people floating around in the Brahman. You know, and Krishna doesn't want to see the living entity frustrated because he has affection. Therefore, he gives them the opportunity in the material world to try to fulfill their needs until such time as they see it's useless and there is nothing here. There is nothing to gain. The real affection, the real trust, the real loyalty is all in the spiritual world. Like that. That's there. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay.
The word attachment in English doesn't make it. Attachment, something that is attached can be detached. In Spanish, the word is apego. Apego means glued to it.
Glued, yes.
So if it has to be glued together, they cannot pass even through the door. The same, the kids, they get glued to it. Everything gets glued, the possessions, everything.
So you have to make wider. So in the Hispanic countries, they have bigger doors. Oh, that's where they're like, you have two rooms and there's kind of like, it's kind of like an archway in between. That started, that's a, that coming, that's a Mediterranean.
They cannot walk together.
Okay, now I get it, I get it. Maharaj, yeah.
We have a concern about young men who, due to some superficial dissatisfaction, artificially detach themselves.
Mm-hmm.
From their family, they feel some. They don't feel comfortable, so they scoot out. Mm-hmm. And then there's some. They have problems later. Like you said, they come back or they start another family. Could you speak about how relevant those concerns are for men in their 50s?
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Taking something more topical here. There would be two approaches to it. One would be, means as ultimate devotional, and the other would be cultural. If we look at it culturally, I mean, let's look at the devotional. Devotional, the whole point is we have to get to back to Godhead. That's the real thing. And we're willing to do anything for that, sacrifice anything for that. So then that means if the position has come where we have the understanding to the point where we could function outside the family, and the situation is such that it's more favorable to be out from the family, we would take it, even though the family is very comfortable, you know. At the same time, is there would be the element that if we see no, because either I've started late or because of just bad background or lack of training, lack of brahmacharya, I don't really have much to fall back on, one may continue longer. Because the idea is the point is not to take sannyas, the point is to uproot the material need for family life. That's what vanaprastha sannyas is. It's not an external. It's actually a, an ideology or something that you are trying to obtain, that is obtainable. Ideology wouldn't be the thing. It's just like you have, it's like you have a hero. It's an ideal that you're trying to obtain to. So obtaining it is actually the purpose. So the sannyas is indifference. That's what it is. It's not the external. It's that he's indifferent. He does not do anything that creates, from his side, enemies. He doesn't do anything to... He will not do anything that for the material body will create an enemy. He may be Krishna conscious, everybody becomes his enemy because they don't like Krishna conscious. That's another thing. He can't be worried about that. Like Yudhishthira had no enemies, but you can't say, but Duryodhana felt Yudhishthira was his enemy, but he didn't have any. Like that. Control of the senses by knowledge, like that, because just controlling it by knowledge, like that, and contemplating just how the material energy just doesn't, you know, the transmigrations of men to unlimited species of life, situations they want to be in with loved ones they're separated from, situations they hate they're put into, you know, unlimited lifetimes of just going through hellish situations like this, and also just that whatever is coming to me, this is from the other living entities are only instrument, my previous activities, and so therefore there's no reason to become inimical. One has a forgiving disposition, all these things. That's sannyas. The dress and all that, those are facilities that go along with it. You know, because you have minimal connection, therefore you have minimal stuff, minimal clothes, minimal responsibility. It just goes with it. It's the natural package. You know, just like if you get a fancy perfume, it comes in a fancy bottle. But the fancy, if I got the fancy bottle, doesn't mean I have the perfume, you know, like that. So the point is, it's better to have the perfume and just, you know, some old, you know, milk bottle, you know, that you have it. So my point is that if need be, though it should not be taken advantage of. This is the point of honesty comes in. If it's seen that, no, it's tight, knot is so tight, by leaving the family at this time, it won't be any better to stay. Better to stay until that. But one should have that ideal that I have to move towards that. Everybody has to move towards that. You know, the husband, the wife, the children, everybody has to move towards to get out of here. So, if need be, stay longer. And like that.
But vanaprastha doesn't necessarily entail leaving.
Yes, vanaprastha is the better option, especially if there's still the passion for economic development, sense gratification, and all that, then they have to remain as a grihastha, and they should project themselves in that way. They should not present that I am a vanaprastha. But if those things have reduced, so now the husband and wife, okay, been there, done that, raised the children, you know, got all the money, you know, did all this and that, had the 5 million saris, you know, all those things. Now we can, you know, just settle down and like that. Then husband and wife together can work very nicely to fill their life out with more direct Krishna consciousness. And then, and that's very favorable, because then naturally the conjugal aspect starts to drop and the friendship aspect remains. And there's no problem with friendship. Devotees are friends. You know, so you can eternally be a friend. You can't eternally be husband and wife. So in the spiritual world, you can still be friends. We'll be friends with, Prabhupada says, everyone, ISKCON, will be together in the spiritual world. So we're going to be friends. But the mundane relationships, you know, like that, that will change. You know, in Vaikuntha, they'll go together as husband and wife. Then in Goloka, you may have two cowherd boys, you know, so it's, you know, it's like, you know, whatever it is, or a gopi and a cowherd boy, you know, maybe anything, or a cow, and a, you know, it doesn't matter. So, like that. So then the vanaprastha becomes a very viable method to create more freedom for direct service and preaching and helping others, but at the same time maintaining that still connection with the emotional exchange that one is accustomed to and one may find he actually still requires. But the devotional service is so powerful that it doesn't matter. Chanting Hare Krishna is more powerful than the grossest sinful attachment that one has. But because people will take advantage of that, therefore we have on the other side as heavy as statements, you know, just saying that, you know, the heart of one who's filled with material desire can never understand the Supreme. And we have the same. They're the counterbalance. Means if you take the middle line off to the right, then there's a shloka on the left to bring it back. You know, if you take it to the left, there's one on the right. So that's the whole point, is that the middle is where we're trying to go. So it's, if it works, and it's dynamic, it's Krishna conscious, whatever. Therefore, griye tako vane tako, you know. That's why I was mentioning about the significance of the 73 date. Because at that time then started the, you know, women are Maya and the brahmachari sannyasis, grihasthas are out to lunch. And, you know, that all started at that time.
Just a historical note.
Okay.
It didn't all start at that time.
Oh, okay. That was where I was aware of it, and others have told me.
I first became aware of it in 1968 when I joined.
Oh, okay. 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 Very good. Very good. I think maybe that's when it was propagated. Or was it propagated then also? But it was very dynamically propagated.
Well, I just don't know. You know, there's this, like, retro history where everybody was, like, you know, just had a kind of buddy-buddy view of the world until 1973, when some uptight sannyasis came back from India and started propagating this view, all these chauvinistic views. It's just not historically true. Prabhupada had already written the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and it arrived with him, and people were reading it back in the 1960s. And they picked up on the idea that householder life was not preferred.
Oh, no. From that aspect, I'm not talking that aspect. I'm talking about that culturally, even though it wasn't preferred, there seems to be the etiquettes were nicely followed between the different members, from what I've heard from devotees.
Yeah, I think you can say that etiquette suffered after
that. Yeah, so that's actually the point I'm trying to make. It's not that. So I stand corrected on the point there. But what I was meaning is that the interactions were such that between the different members and the ashrams, the interactions became rough or even offensive. Well, before that, as from what I saw, is, you know, the men and women, you know, respected and dealt with each other, but stayed apart, huh?
Cordiality was...
Yeah, that was lost, like that. Okay. Yes?
When you were talking about chanting Hare Krishna and develop love for Krishna, the more we, even though in a neophyte platform, the more we develop love for Krishna, we start developing love for each other, love for everybody.
Yeah.
I see as a grihastha, I've been 16 years married, it's changing into a loving relationship that is different. The lady is trying hard to please the husband to be able to serve Krishna in that way, because Lord Krishna wanted it that way. She started appreciating the service that she's trying to offer to Krishna. And I think it's vice versa also. So the relationship becomes not so much as attachment, but these nice blessings of Krishna all the time. We can chant, we can see the deity, we can interact with the devotees. The same is with the children, the same is with the devotees, the same is with the mothers, the same is with with everybody. We cannot say karmis anymore. They look like everybody is Krishna's plan. So the more we chant, the more we develop a different kind of love. For the first time, using without attachment. Slowly.
So that's the point, is the detachment element. Like that. When that comes up, then one sees more clearly relationships. Because relationships are never supposed to be broken down. They're just supposed to come into their proper place. You know, just like salt's not bad, but if you put too much, it's not good. You know, and if it's a sweet, then you don't put any at all. You know, there's no... Because sweets don't have salt in it, it's not because there's something wrong with salt. You know, it's that just sweets only have sweet in it. You know, that's all.
Because we hear that Krishna is detached, and then we think that Krishna is not considerate, not kind. Krishna is so perfect in relationships.
So
we should also...
Okay. Last point, and then we'll close.
No,
and then
we'll continue.
Would you stay over? Should we continue this after? Would you stay? Because then we can continue or not? Or what's your question?
I was wondering, Maharaj, like about attachment. It seems like if you compare like some Western countries and even like in India or maybe some other countries in the world, there is still some family attachment. But if you look at Western countries, many of them, you see that even that family attachment is almost not there. Like people just, they come together, they have offspring or not, and then they move on to the next. But there is only more and more like single units going. And so how is it that can we from that lack of even some attachment for family members, if we in that kind of state become a devotee, how does it, because in Krishna consciousness, it's not that there is a lack of attachment, a lack of care, of affection. So, can we move from that selfish state to, complete renunciation and affection to others on the spiritual platform? I mean, can we just leap?
Can we leap
from the not even any affection for any family members? Like, you know, your abomination, okay, I'll take that.
Okay, so question is that coming from a Western background where there doesn't seem to be much of a family unit, then can one go from that cultural platform to the transcendental platform directly? Point is that until Lord Chaitanya makes a point of etiquette, it needs to be there. Because when you get to the spiritual world, that's what people do. So without that, one won't get there. Westerners are selfish. Selfish means you think of yourself a lot. So one can use that method to advantage. But it means if you don't get to something one way, in a natural way, you can get to it another. Okay, let's look at it from the selfish point. Okay, the person's only interested in their own needs. Therefore, then man and woman come together. You know, needs are fulfilled, great, not, they go away. But if you actually look at it, the difference between those communities that have strong family units and those communities that don't is the awareness of the needs of that attachment. Does that make sense? Means an Indian man and Indian grihasthas or these third world grihasthas, they know what they want from the other partner and they know what the other person is giving them. They're clear about that. You know, the communities where they don't have these strong relationships, they have attachment, but they could not articulate it. If you paid them, they could not articulate it. You'd have to take them through step by step because they don't even know what it is. So because of that, they don't know what to appreciate that they're getting, and they actually don't know what they're looking for. They just have a feeling that, okay, they want to be together, this should happen, that should happen. But the thing that's happening isn't what they're looking for. The situation is to create a mood, right? The couple doesn't sit down to look at the sunset because the sunset's important. The sunset creates an opportunity for a particular type of exchange. Does that make sense? But they will think it's the sunset, and so if the other one doesn't want to go up and look at the sunset or doesn't want to do that, then it's thought there's something wrong here. You understand? So that's the difference, is that the more you actually are in knowledge and you know, if it is selfish, then be fully, because selfish means you are absorbed in the self without knowledge. Self-realized means you are absorbed in the self with knowledge. So then the man has a need for a woman. Why? What is it he expects the woman to give in his life? Right? What is it that's there? But if he doesn't know, how does he know if she's giving it? She may be giving it. He doesn't know. Right? If she doesn't know, and he doesn't know what he needs, he doesn't know what a woman is and what she needs, he doesn't know what and she doesn't know either, it can't work. It means you can't work with a knife if you don't know what it is. You'll get cut. So the point is the more you know about the knife, the more expertly you can apply it. But the problem comes is that ignorance is bliss. So I've generally seen is people don't like to hear about the technologies of relationship because then they're in knowledge. And as soon as they're in knowledge, then they look at it realistically. And when they look at it realistically, automatically this concept of false detachment comes up. You know? I've seen that so many times. I'll be telling somebody who's very attached to women what is the nature of women so that they'll know how to deal with them very nicely. But I've seen in so many cases the opposite comes because they know where the weaknesses are in the women. Therefore, then they consider themselves superior and then they mistreat them. Rather than That's their weakness, like a child. They don't know when to eat or not or what to do, so they're weak in that. So therefore, the adult knows that I have to take care and see that the child eats properly and on time and nicely. In other words, knowing the other's weaknesses is for helping, not exploiting. So the problem is knowledge either creates exploitation or this so-called renunciation. So therefore, the person, you know, who's happy at the doesn't want to hear about it. Because as soon as knowledge comes in, the experience is lost. But the Vedic is you know the knowledge and it's so well there that it can still function while the experience is going on. Right? You know, a new cook is sitting there and it's a thing and the board and the knife and the vegetables and their fingers, they have to watch it really close. You know? But as they become expert, then they're just thinking of, you know, this goes here and I'll cut like this and this is gonna go in there and I'll get it. And it's just happening. But they're in full knowledge. So the need to be able to take that step, have that faith that by having this knowledge and applying it in my life in the situation of my need is actually going to get the ultimate detachment from the material energy and ultimate attachment to Krishna. But it doesn't mean that I have to give up what's going on here now. You know? But the I would say is that just for the sense of justice is that in the past those who have made this mistake and prematurely or falsely given up families and that, you'd probably find many of them, it was in their own way sincere in that they thought this was a better way to move forward in Krishna consciousness for the movement and all that. So, in that way, they can't be blamed for the lack of wisdom like that. But, you know, now people can see more. But, you know what I'm saying? But it doesn't do the other side that therefore then any kind of renunciation is bad. No, it has to be balanced. So it's like that. So that way one can, you know, forgive and move on. Because forgiveness is one of the primary duties of a Brahmin. Is forgiveness. That's, what's his name? Yeah. It's always there. But,
Does that also apply to leaving the Grihastha thing, but spiritual masters who didn't?
Yeah, same thing. Everything means spiritual master has problems. It's like this. We have a relationship with them. They tried, you know, in their best to help us. We benefited. You know, I would say that there would be hard to find a devotee who didn't benefit from the gurus that fell down. They were advanced, and still now the fundamental training and kind of like consciousness that was given to them in those days is still with them today. So even they approach another guru, they're taking that and adding that onto, building on what was there. So that's been there. So therefore we should appreciate what was given. And if they can't take us anymore, then it's unfortunate. But as far as the tattva goes, as far as Krishna consciousness, that knowledge of advancing is there anyway. Any Prabhupada's books, any senior Vaishnavas, anyone can give that to us. The real loss is just that feeling and that commitment and relationship that was there, that personal. That's lost, and that's harder to reinstate with others who can give us the same information. You know, so that's actually the main, is that loss of that relationship. But as far as technically, is the guru is giving you the knowledge coming from Prabhupada's books. He is very expert in giving it to us just the way we understand it. Someone else may give us the same knowledge that's not as tailored to our needs. But with time, that will come. You know, or better is through a group of persons, because somebody, you know, can add in this side, someone in that side, and like this, you know. So then, through a community of senior devotees, then one is able to take care of all of the needs. Does that make sense? So that should be applied to you know, anything, leaders, this and that. Because the point is all the external form of it, its realness is only its connection to Krishna. But other than that, then it doesn't have any meaning. You know, someone's a manager, they have managerial ability, so naturally, according to Bhagavad Gita, they would engage that in Krishna's service. But they have their own same difficulties and, you know, anarthas to work out as the devotee who their natural service is washing pots. But because to organize things, the person who's managing has to be more prominent. And what they say goes, but it's not that their difficulties are any less than the pot washer. You know, so for management you have to have that. For spiritual, then there's no difference. Like that. Does that make some sense? So then, in that way, if we can leave it, then it's better for us, because that sense of justice and these kind of things, it's painful, it's not inspiring. It's because they are devotees, and in their own way, from their perspective, they're trying their best. A business, that's not gamble. They may decide that fashion may change, I may not sell anything. That's the risk. But it's not gambling. You understand? Gambling means without knowledge. You know, risk is with knowledge. So that's the difference. So if someone is a technical analysis, you know, in the stock market, that's business. But if they're just reading magazines and going online and taking advice from here and there, that's gambling. You know what I'm saying? Because it's all anyway, it's just like business, is you have their fashion. I mean, anything you take, fashion mood changes, food changes, it's all changing according to whim. So those who know business know how whims move. Like in the fashion world, they know how the whims move. You know, what's the cycle of pleats? You know, what's the cycle of checks? You know, what's the cycle of stripes? What's the cycle of, you know, straight or tapered or bell? You know, because if you watch them, they go from getting more and more scanty to more and more covered, and then more and more scanty to more and more covered. It's just the way it goes. So those in the field know the cycle. And so they know that now should be coming, by all indications, you know, this kind of fashion. You know, so that's the way it is you know psychologically how people function. Because the stock market is just psychology. People are comfortable, they put in money, they're not comfortable, they take it out. So you know what makes them comfortable or not, and you know the cycles of their comfortableness. And it's set patterns, because it's all based on astrology. Like that. It's all astrological. So it's just like we can project that, okay, next year is going to be a bad year all over the world of people respecting authority because of the planets. So you just know these planets are going to do this, these stocks are just, they're set things, because this market has been going on. It was actually in the Western, it started by the Romans. Like that. So it's been going on for thousands of years. Yes. Oh, you're just quick exit stage left. Okay, so now after that important explanation, we're going to end here. And then for anyone who likes, we'll continue questions for a little bit. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanatai Gaura Premanam ki. Thank you. That's an interesting question.
So, attaching a big one is the equivalent. I have more and more.
Yeah.
It's two different relationships. Nobody can get from the other one.
What they want, because the problem is like the husband's getting full attention from the wife, but as soon as the kid's there, there's no attention. You know, and then the kid's getting all the attention, then when the next brother comes, he gets no attention. You know, so it's just, it's frustration. That's the thing, is that the spiritual, you don't have that problem. But the material, it's fraught with it. So that's the point, is therefore one does the duties, you know. And then if you do the duties, then you get the interaction you're looking for. So instead of getting... Yeah, and they, even doing that, they won't even get good sense gratification. You know? Is the turban Wallace still there? Okay. Are you both, is he still there? You had a question? You had your question? So it's four generations including yourself, the Shraddha writes. If he's liberated, how do 10 generations after get liberated? Means, in other words, if he had not, because liberation is something outside of the material sphere. Means you're moving through the species of life and all that. It's basically set pattern, you know, like that. But it's very, very complex. I mean, that's a thing that they've called now. Before it was called chaos theory. Now they call it, now that they've cracked it, they call it fractals. Yeah. So this fractal aspect is that it's going to go. So someone's going to move through the 8,400,000 species and the subdivisions of that, basically in a fairly kind of set pattern. You know what I'm saying? So if you hadn't become liberated and you were still continuing your material existence as if you were going on the material platform, then naturally you would have taken these next 10 births. You know, or so many births. Because it's just set. The yogi, he's drilling the respiration for millions of lifetimes. A jnani, millions of lifetimes. One's a karmi, millions of lifetimes. You know, one's a malecha yap for it just, because it takes a long, long time for one to be fully convinced of an experience that it changes your value. Right? It's just like, you know, the old man is thinking, yeah, family life's so useless and this and that and so many things, what did I get? But if the right person comes along, he's right back there like a kid again. Does that make sense? Because they have the knowledge, but it hasn't become value. Until it's value, you don't change. So depending on your values, that's the kind of ear, nose, eyes, you know, situation that the mind creates for you. Does that make sense? Because you've already done an activity now, some affect immediately, some affect the next life, some affect many lifetimes. Does that make some sense?
Does that mean that this lifetime is actually the 10th generation which is supposed to liberate 10 generations
forward? But the point is those souls will be liberated. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that they will, because you're not there, maybe they won't take birth as your son, but you're connected. You would be, by karma, you were connected with those souls, and by karma, you would be connected with these souls. Right? Just like the man kills the animal. The next life, the animal's the man, and the man's the animal. And then the opportunity to kill the animal is there for the man. You know, and because then he's killed you, then it switches again. It just keeps going for until somebody decides, hey, I want to be a vegetarian. And then that cycle stops. And then if you have so many lifetimes left and someone else is not a vegetarian, they'll kill you. And then you start it up with them. So it's very, very complex.
Most of the children, Maharaj, for example, someone becomes pure. Whoever is in his circle becomes more pure. Means their children.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, no, it's very nice in that way. Same way, as the cycle of karma is very complex, the cycle of bhakti also. It means all these, Prabhupada mentions the sixth canto, I've only seen one place. Anyone born in an aristocratic or noble family they've all done devotional service. That's everyone. Not on the whole planet. They've done some, but it's like Gyata Sukriti. You know, they've seen a Rath Yatra, they've heard a Harinam, they've, you know, touched, they've done something that's connected to Krishna. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. Every last one of them, every last one of those Mlechas and Yamanas out there born in rich, powerful families, they've all done some devotional service. Devotees don't think like that. We're the ones and everybody else. No, they're just sitting there waiting for you to preach to them. But unfortunately, to preach to them, we would have to wear something other than streetwear. But devotees are attached to their streetwear. Therefore, we're not preaching to that class of people.
Srila Prabhupada was telling Syam Sundar that John Lennon was a very rich person in Calcutta.
Mm-hmm.
Was a musician and famous in Calcutta.
Yeah.
Took birth there, became famous, and even host Prabhupada in his own home.
Yeah, yeah.
So if a karmi can take birth in the West, how many devotees who were performing activities here took birth there to serve Prabhupada?
Yeah, that can be there also. Yeah, Prabhupada said, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is sending these devotees. Like that.
This verse, Devashi that you're adapted to your ancestors.
Yeah.
But the Godra you're born in.
Mm-hmm.
Is something called the Vaidhi or whatever?
Because of them, you are born. You have the opportunity. Human life is special. So because of them, the family is there that matches your need that you are taking birth in it. So you're born into a good family, but that family then has its respect. The community respects that family. You didn't create that respect for your family. You inherited that. You know, you have property, you have money, you have support and relationships. Just because you're born there, you know, traditional families, you have 50 people there, you know, standing behind you. And you can't do anything except cry and, you know, wet your diapers. But they're all there. So that's created by the forefathers. That's why you owe them, you know, you have a debt to them. The reason it's there is because they follow the scriptures. Right? And the Brahmins that advise them and train them, you have a debt to them. Right? All the things that are going on in your house and everything, those are all managed by all kinds of living entities. That's just their job. You know, all kinds of ghost spirits and snakes and this and that, and they're doing all this work for you. You have a debt to them, right? The community itself, you're getting benefit because they respect your family, this and that, and there's economic and social interaction, and you have a debt to them, right? And the demigods, they're arranging everything, the sun, the moon, the rain, everything like this, and all the benefits, you have a debt to them. So these five debts, every human being as a grihastha has to pay. The brahmacharis, they don't, because they're not taking advantage of the facility, but the grihastha has to pay. So if one has taken up devotional service to Krishna, those debts don't have to be paid. But if you're not serving Krishna, you owe those debts, and you don't pay them, you go to hell. It's that simple.
But he's paying.
That's the point, is if he's a devotee, then it works. He's a devotee, so therefore he's taking care of Krishna. The demigods, Krishna is the source of the demigods. He is the original forefather. All living entities that are just parts, you know, of the universal form. You know, he is the scripture. He, you know, like that. So therefore, if you serve Krishna, you don't owe that debt. So that's why in the Vedic culture is that the five Mahayagyas, Pancha Mahayagya, is so important for grihasthas. In the grihastha, the definition of grihastha ashram opens with this. Like that. Then after explaining that, then it gets into detail of how he should dress and this and that. So the first opening is he gets married. The fire from his marriage, that's taken to his house. With that, he cooks his food. With that, he performs his daily yajna. That's the one, because that goes with that wife and that family. If his wife dies, like that, she's a chaste woman, the wife dies, then all the implements of the yajna are put into the cremation of the wife. because it's from the marriage to this woman that he has the opportunity to perform these activities. So if she dies, then they all go with her. And then, you know, if it's, you know, later, then he takes sannyas, he doesn't need. If he's still young, he marries again. Then from that fresh fire, then from that, then he performs the activities.
So the planet fire is the same fire as the household fire?
It means it's, yeah, it means it's from that fire. The name may change, but it's from that fire because it's a purified fire. So it's, so the grihastha thing, that's where then they have the right to perform all these things and take care. Because on the platform, on the mundane platform, the grihastha is the senior ashram because everything else comes out of them. The grihastha creates the brahmacharis. Grihasthas retire as vanaprasthas, take sannyas. Like that. Grihasthas, they generate all the income and they give all the charity to, you know, the brahmacharis and sannyasis and vanaprasthas. They give it to the kings, you know, who then, you know, if charity, then it comes back, how you say, you know, in facilities and all that. You know, they take, does that make sense? So everything on the material platform comes out of the grihasthas. So in that way, they're the senior ashram. Like that. But on the transcendental platform, then the other three are considered like that. Because of that, you know, and then of that the sannyas, and then of that the Paramahamsa.
Do you have an experience in Western families, if there is like something like a Pitri Dosha or problems causing them? Other than try to explain this in lectures in the West.
Is there Pitri Dosha?
Yeah, the doubts, because they don't believe actually in having any relationship with the ancestor.
Oh, so they have Pitri Dosha, it means they will. They will. Means it doesn't matter if you're Vedic or non-Vedic, it's still the same. It means just like fire only burns somebody who believes in the Vedic scriptures. It doesn't burn Valechas and Yavanas. You know what I'm saying? So it has, but it's not important to deal with that. Because the point is Vedic culture is so complex because you have so many pious people who are engaging all those pious needs, and it's based on tradition. Does that make sense? Therefore, it's very complex, and because of the mundane view, then you must have so many elements in there. Does that make sense? Like that. So, there's so many restrictions, but Daivavarna Ashram has less. It's only the essential form of the Varnashram. It means the externals are just the essence, but its main essence is the Krishna consciousness. So, therefore, if you want to establish Daiva Varnashram, as far as establishing the form, it's easier to deal with the West because they have no concept. So you just give them a few things and it's complete and they're satisfied. Right? While those who have grown up are born in, those who are following some remnants of the Vedic culture, it would be harder for them to cut all those things down to the essence because of attachment. Right? But in the inverse, those who have grown up with no culture find it more difficult to practice the essentials of the culture based on relationship because they don't know what that is. Well, the those from the traditional backgrounds, they relationship and working together and all that, that's easier for them. But it gets all caught up in mundane considerations and mundane rewards. So the non-Vedic, it's easier for them to be detached in theory. You know, and the others are attached. You know, so but at the same time, as if it's decided upon, then generally it works better. You know.
Yeah. I will serve also by being already in India. Many people, because they worship the demigods, so they have an impersonal way of seeing God. They're actually less advanced than many Westerners who have a strong faith in God, and they want to just to develop devotion.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen in traditional South America
how
people, even Indians who live there, what we call Indians, Aborigines, they're so faithful to God compared to here, they're just worshipping demigods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and they have just desire to become Americans or go to America. They don't have desire to go to the heavenly planets anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they just take birth in the West.
I mean, going to America, I mean, that's heaven on earth, goodwill to men, right?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, today's the day, right? Yeah, no, it's true. Prabhupada made a comment that the Indians are standing very close to Krishna with their back to him, facing away. And the Westerners are standing very far away from Krishna, but facing him. It means, are the devotees. Like that. It means if you could just convince that those born in India about the essentials of their culture, and they're convinced of it, and they can act on it, they're so valuable. Like that. Because for them, it's already there. They've grown up. Everything's there. You know? So that's the point. Is what Prabhupada is making is that, you know, the Western, you know, lechas and yamanas are doing the duties of Brahmins because there's an emergency. Because the Brahmins aren't doing it. They're too worried about getting their son educated in America. So therefore, we're doing it. But if they would be doing it, then, you know, we would just assist.
There would be the true tradition behind.
Yeah, then we would just assist.
Well, this is the cause that they're standing on the back towards Krishna. If you look from a historical point of view, and from a philosophical point of view, why is it happening? Because they were not like that.
Why are they turning their back? Because, how do you say, let me just give some ideas. Is that one is that fruit of desire. They want it to be fulfilled, so they tend to go to the demigods. Krishna discusses that in Gita. Or material world is so painful for them, so therefore anything material, this is also a symptom of the living entity being feminine, is that it's a feminine quality. If an activity happens and the experience is bad, anything connected with that scene is bad. You know? It's not like the logic of that one thing or sit was bad and everything else, at least give it a try. No, it's just written off. So that also is a symptom of that we can't be God. We have to be Shakti because we've had bad experience in the material world, so therefore anything with form, shape, taste, you know, smell, touch, interaction, relationship must be bad. So therefore, spiritual must be the opposite, which is, you know, impersonal. Yeah. Does that make sense? So, because of these experiences, then someone who becomes frustrated with both of those, karma failed on them, gyan failed on them, then they become Buddhists. Because that's, what is it, raga? What do you mean, what is it? Raga? Raga, dvesha. Raga, it means there's three. Anger, I mean, attachment, fear and anger. So attachment is karma. Fear means fear of your relationship of being servant and God's God, not me. That's gyan. And anger, that's Buddhism. But it follows the circle because it comes back around because then they get back into sense gratification and then they become a karmi. They understand that their non-directed sense gratification can be enhanced by properly following, then they become karmis again. You know, so that's the circle. So you're saying, so it's natural the living entity deal with the material world will turn their back. So that's the thing. But the culture, the values, everything, it's in place. Means anybody who's a little bit from the tradition, they all accept guru. You know, whatever it is. That means somebody from a cultured Indian family, even if it's their, you know, first grade, you know, teacher, they will, their whole life, never insult them. They'll always, you know, respect them. They'll always respect the mother and father. They'll always, you know, be gentle with women. They'll always be, you know, very considerate in, you know, their relations with others and what should be done. You know, it's like for us, somebody's, you know, a wedding comes up, oh, it's an annoyance. For the Indians, it's just, this one's getting married. Everything packs up and you go. It's not a question of discussion or that. It's not, it just happens.
It's a worry?
Huh?
It's
I say for the Westerners that they got to go, that's the point, because you're from a different background. Point is my life's going on fine. I don't want to stop everything and go halfway across the planet to spend, 2 weeks with relatives I haven't seen for millions of years, and sit around with crocodile smiles on my face for, like that, affect my, the aging process. So I'll have to go to the beautician to get them all taken out from, like that for so long, So it's an annoyance. But in the Indian families, they're family, and when a wedding happens, that it's, it's so overpowering to the people involved and those that everybody's got to be part. And so you just go. It's not a matter of, it's just, so therefore, it's been there. You see them all sitting there, and they're not paying attention to nothing, but they're there. And you ask him, I was asking one man, and he's just sitting there, they're talking like this and that. And then now and again, they go, oh, okay, now they're going to do this and like that. And they'll go, now this is the important part, because I was just a guest there. And I was asked, how many weddings have you been to? He said, at least 100. And that's the full, thing, the whole thing. And so they know everything. And so it's just part of the thing. That was just an example. Or kids. Kids just means you have kids, they take up all your time. You don't have time. Your kids are your time. But the modern, it's a problem. Therefore, you have, daycare at 6 months old. Like that. India, traditional Indians, there is daycare means the house. It's all daycare, like that. It's just different. It's understood, It's like Indian families is that when you have the children, then all the attention that the husband gets from the wife goes on the kid. And the husband is there making sure, supporting that she has everything she needs. And, putting whatever input he can put into the kid, the older they get, the less. But the Western is like, hey, what happened? I got all the attention, and now she's with the kid all day. So they can't figure out what happened.
Actually, the West is really very limited. Like, for example, you just cross the border of America, and Mexico down is completely different.
Yeah.
The same in Europe, you have the Greeks, the Italians, and even the people from Croatia and all this upper part, they're completely different, but this is called Europe.
Mm-hmm. You can almost nail it down to the Anglo-Saxons, throw in a few Germans and French, and Haribal. That is, in their mind, the world.
Yes,
like that. They are the world. The first world, they think they're the world. They in no way represent. And unfortunately, the devotees make exactly the same mistake. It's an advantage. Because of that, you take an American, if he's into Krishna consciousness, he'll go to any country in the world and change the whole country. That's the advantage you'll see, is that practically every yatra on the planet was opened by Americans or by British who were made by the Americans. Like that. It's basically just because they have this world view of that they are what's happening and everybody else is out of it. So if they become Krishna conscious, it's a great advantage for preaching. And that's why Prabhupada saw going to New York, that's the end of Americans, New Yorkers. End of New Yorkers, those from Manhattan. Like that. It's just how, it's just, there's no question that there's anything else other than how they think. So if they become Krishna conscious, hey, the rest of the world, better become Krishna conscious or they're out of it. So it's an advantage. They'll immediately drop anything. An American can, up to when they met the devotee, whatever was their value or anything, if they sit and are convinced that Krishna, everything is thrown out. I mean everything. There's nothing that's not thrown out. It's just a clean slate. And then if by good association and that you fill up the new slate with enough that keeps them spiritually and culturally absorbed, that's it. They're no longer what they were. But any of the others other than this group, then they're much more thoughtful about life and all that, so therefore they're also more careful. You get a continental European, it takes him forever before he would ever move into a temple. There'll be great congregation after really being careful what it's going to do to their business, their life, because if it affects their business, how do they maintain their family? So they're very, how it's going to deal with all the other relations. They'll think all this out. Probably said the slowest of the Chinese. But once they're convinced, that's it, you know. They don't care what happens to them.
The second part of the question I asked was why they should have had Krishna. Historical,
You could say is that it's always been there, because the six symptoms of philosophy always means that there's a lot of people who follow the Shastra, so that means they're on Krishna's path, and they, by following it, they're very pious and very close to Krishna, but they have their face pointed away. So anyone who's following the six symptoms, six systems like that, it's not Vyasa's, you know, viewpoint, then they actually have their back to Krishna. They are, but at least they're on the path that it doesn't make it difficult, you know, for those who are following. It will create a pious environment in which Krishna consciousness can be followed. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's there. Then you'll have that when the moguls came in, then it would drop at something, because then they converted so many people because of the foolishness of the Brahmins. Then when the British came, it broke it down more. But actually, what the British, what the Mughals couldn't do in, you know, a few thousand, in, I think over 1,000 years, and what the British couldn't do in 250, the Indians themselves have managed very expertly in the last 50 years under their own, like that. So that would be kind of how it comes down. And then even that, they were trying their best to break it down, but I think it was about 97 when, or 95 when Star TV came into India. Then that was kind of like, that finished it off.
I was thinking about the Mahabharata Lord, because it broke more or less the very culture of the connections between all the civilizations. And that is the start of the Krishna.
Could. You could say, but that's just Kali Yuga. And that's just the way things go anyway. Historically, they are going to break down anyway.
But didn't have the Ramachandras in that war, and the other Parshurams came in there.
No, because you didn't have Kali Yuga. Does that make sense? I also just read, you were wondering about it, is Parasuram appeared in the Sandhi between the Treta and the Dwapara Yugas.
After Ramachandra?
It's not after, because the point is the Sandhi, because you take Satyuga is 4,000 celestial years, right? Its Sandhi is the same in hundreds, it's 400. And Treta Yuga is 3,000 celestial years, so that's 700 celestial years is the Sandhi between the two Yugas, right? So that means that's about 250,000 years. So in that Sunday, that's where Parasuram. So it would still be counted like Treta Yuga. So Ramachandra's pastimes could have happened, because you have it, you know. Maybe, but whatever. It's just like Krishna's appeared, it's in the Sunday. Because, you understand, it's still in the Sunday. It's still within the influence of Dwapara Yuga. Right? Just like in astrology, you have 30 degrees. Is that influence of a house, but actually in its pure state you only take half of it. 15 degrees is, and then 7.5 here, 7.5 there. So this 7.5 is like the next one, and the 7.5 on this is like this one. But it carries that flavor. So it's Dwapara Yuga, but it starts carrying the flavor of the Kali, and the Kali of that has some of the flavor of the other. Like that. So Krishna appeared in the Sunday, so it's not a problem if Ramachandra appears in the Sunday.
Normally, without complete purity, Krishna, he himself will turn away.
Mm-hmm.
The Kali Yuga gets so...
But no, Krishna never turns away, because the point is that it's illusory. It doesn't... The sins that the living entity does doesn't mean anything to Krishna. What's painful is just he's not interacting, or they think they're God.
They need to bhakti.
Yeah.
Just start missing the bhakti.
Yeah, because morality is in the mode of passion. So Krishna consciousness is pure goodness. So because of breakage of morality, that's not what actually breaks down the thing. You know, it's just we aren't willing to be involved, and therefore, because of that, then it's Krishna is everything, so therefore Maya has to, Yoga Maya has to create this illusion that this material energy, which is Krishna's energy, is not Krishna. So by our misunderstanding and material desire, therefore Krishna is clouded, but he never turns his back on us. We're the ones that turn our back on them. You know, it's just like rare, the parent turns their back on the kid, no matter what they do. Kids turn their back on parents. You know, like that. But generally, the parents don't turn their back on the kids. Is that okay? You had something? How do we bridge the gap? Means for lacking vanaprasthas in our society. Those who are grihasthas, who basically are retired, recognizing that's their position and taking that stance. You know? And those who grihastha life is winding down, but right now the alternative is sannyas. So then they could be vanaprasthas. Does that make sense? So if it's just accepted that it's a bona fide ashram, and because it has respect, it's senior to the grihastha, so it has respect. They have experience, they have knowledge, they study, they teach, and they're detached. So therefore, it's a very good ashram in that way. Yeah, what I'm saying is it's just a matter of devotees recognizing it. We have devotees in those positions, but that's not being recognized by either them or others. We have plenty of grihasthas that are, you know, they're just kind of together and they're going on in that, but they're vanaprasthas actually. Means would they be or no? It's because if you can see something in yourself, then you can help others see it, right? It means for dynamic, outgoing kind of stuff like that, the grihasthas take care. They should be doing it. Grihasthas should be taking care of the grihasthas, right? But generally, grihasthas want to be taken care of, so that indicates that they're not dwijas. Dwijas take care. Shudras are taken care of. So the Western culture has trained everybody as shudras, right? Even you're a doctor, you work in a hospital where a manager manages you for business sake, even though he's a Brahmin, right? You know what I'm saying? Teachers, they're at the school, there's an administrator. You know, so even that they may be dwijas by nature, they've been conditioned to be shudras, to just be taken care of by the state. So grihasthas don't take care of grihasthas. The last person that takes care of anybody is grihasthas. I would say some do, you do have, but I would say is that I know a lot more sannyasis who take care of grihasthas way better than any grihastha would take care. Because they're not attached, so they can do. Grihastha is a problem for him to take care because one of the things is just attachments get involved, this, that, he's got to put his money but to his wife. His wife's not going to let him take care of other families where there's women involved. Why they should get the money, why she shouldn't be getting it. We're just talking very bare bones facts here. And the reason the brahmacharinis are not taken care of in the temple is because the temple president's wife won't let him. It may be for his own benefit, but the breakdown comes there. The grihasthas don't take care of themselves. Vanaprasthas, because of that detachment, they're in a senior position, they can take more of the parental role. Then, because of that, they can be more involved. And people will listen to them because they're not... See, you don't want to listen to somebody who's in competition with you. Right? An old lady, the young ladies will listen to. But another lady that looks as good as them or better, it's competition. So therefore you don't want to hear. You know what I'm saying? So those who are, the sannyasi is not doing business, the brahmachari is not doing business. But, so you can discuss with them so many things. You can talk with them on things that, you know, in your personal life, because they're not into pajalpa. They don't have to impress their lady friends with the latest gossip. So they just hear it and just tell you what to do and go away and forget about it. So you can talk these things. So vanaprasthas have the same option because they are detached, they aren't involved. They aren't, so it's a very powerful, you know, thing for socially help the improve in the interactions, you know, in the dry and like this.
Maharaj, to identify Srila Prabhupada, one thing to wear a different color or?
Not necessarily. It doesn't matter.
Just have to be known in the community.
Yeah, it means now generally we only apply vanaprastha when the person's not with the wife. And then you see them that they're dressed like a brahmachari. But the grihasthas, they just are grihasthas. But the point is if they've had their children, they're not, you know, involved so much anymore, especially if the children have grown up and now are running, that's the more ideal. Children are growing up on their own, so now husband and wife don't have to take care of them. That's the more natural position, because if the children are there, then the wife needs to take care. You know, one still needs to generate money, still needs to generate all these things, create facility. But, like that. Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, you said, you gave the example of when the man becomes more attached and the woman naturally becomes more attached. And women by nature are more attached and working within that realm.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is it the responsibility of the men also to make, get this detached attitude and also...
For themselves.
In their relationships. Like uh-huh. Detachment that, you know... doing your duty but being detached, and
does
it have the same results as when a man becomes detached?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Here more it's not, because in attachment means, it's like this. I'll give an example. The man, if he's more attached to the woman or the situation, does he behave at his best or not? Really think about it. Or does he start really making mistakes and blowing it? And yeah. The woman, the more she's attached to the person, is she at her best or not? Yes. That's the key. Is that it's not the problem that women are attached. That's a mistake. The problem is that, how you say? That the attachment is self-centered. Right? That's why the woman must be chaste and must be satisfied. Because if you're satisfied, means you have to consider others. The relationship. They've done this, I'm satisfied. Right? It's just like, you know, the child wants to make a picture for the mother. So they take a crayon and a, you know, A4 piece of paper and, you know, you put in the hill and you put the house on it, you know, at 45 degree angle and the smoke coming out the chimney and the bird and the sun with a smile on it and the water and like that, and hands that to the mother. Mother's happy. She's satisfied. You know, you could probably look, probably everybody's mother still has that piece of paper in a drawer somewhere, right? But now if the husband decides, hey, I want to get a nice painting for my wife, and he brings one of those, it's not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? So the satisfaction is it's theirs based on the relationship, the endeavor. So now the husband tries his best, and according to his ability and what he knows, he brings some nice painting and all that, and it's suitable like that. She's satisfied, you know. Okay, maybe it's not Mona Lisa, but you're probably going to have trouble getting it out of the Louvre, you know, but whatever. You know, so does that make sense? So that then creates, that's where it is, because then they relax, they're detached in the fruitiveness of their attachment. So the attachment means the relationship, that doesn't have to be adjusted one bit. But the self-centered fruitiveness of it, that's what they have to work on. So that's the difference. A woman in the realm of attachment can work on detachment. And when she's become attached to that new standard, then she's attached to that. And that becomes a standard. Therefore, they can drop it. But like the men, to just throw it out, that the women can't do. They have to go. It's like the inchworm. You're trying to put your foot down on more of a simple situation, but you have to have your back foot in the opulent situation you're used to. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you have all facilities in your kitchen for cooking anything and everything that you've always cooked, but now you've decided to have a simpler diet. You have everything in the kitchen, but you only cook the simpler diet. But if you wanted at any moment, you could pull out anything and cook whatever you wanted. Then after doing that for a long time, then you see this is more valuable, it's nicer than all those other things. Therefore, then everything goes. And then, you know what I'm saying? But it has to be as while the one's going on, then the other is being practiced. And then when that becomes like valued, then it becomes the back foot, and then the front foot's the... Does that make sense?
Another class you were giving,
like that.
Example, Maharaj, of that. I think it was last year. You were saying that a woman who's very attached works harder, sacrifices everything for the other. She's attached to the other, but not to herself. Like this, what you were saying, self-attached, selfish.
Yeah, selfish. Yeah.
Like if she can share her food, keep giving to everyone. Maybe she don't have anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
It makes sure that everybody in the family is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so nice.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So, in other words, it's the attachments are just connected to Krishna. That's why it doesn't matter. So, as many attachments as a woman has, that many things she can connect to Krishna. And all the things that they like, they are attached to, are generally the things that Krishna likes. You know, nice food, nice clothes, nice fragrances, nice flowers. You know, these kind of things are the things that women are into. So then one can do all those nice things for Krishna. You know, the house can look nice because it's Krishna's house. You're inviting over Krishna's guests. You're feeding him, you know, Krishna's food. You know, like that. So that means that there's no problem in the woman being a woman and, how do you say? And being Krishna conscious. That creates a problem in the society is that it's felt the women can't be women. And so they try not to be on certain levels, but on other levels, then they very much are. You know what I'm saying? So it becomes a problem. They don't have a house, and then finally they get a house. But by the time they get the house, the kids are grown up and gone. And now their need for having a house full of people and interaction, it's they can't do it. So, you know, I'm seeing this happen all over. Like that. They want to be always in the temple, always this, it's Maya to be with the family, but they have to have the family at home. So it's not being balanced. So the point is the attachment's not the problem, but then you work out what is the best way to engage, and considering them also, that's the thing, is that selflessness must be there. You know? So that's there. So the girl's, you know, detachment, you could say, is selflessness. But her motivation for doing it is attachment, the relationships, like that. So that's the thing, you don't have to change. That's why the men, it's more important, they understand the intellectual things and this and that, because that's how their brain works. You know? The women, they understand it enough to establish relationships. If they're academic, great, go for it. If they're not, it doesn't matter, it'll still work. Because they can, you know, be just by relationships, attached to worshipping their deity, attached to being with devotees, attached to, you know, taking prasad, and that's fine. That's actually perfection. You know what I'm saying? Is that okay? Yeah, okay. Yeah, last point, and we'll stop.
I noticed many of the thought of Varnashram, the ashramas, and the interaction of Varnashram.
What about the Varnas?
We're
going to establish within ISKCON Varnas. Well, first you have to establish Brahman. If you want to get Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, you have to have Brahmins first. Like that. Without Brahmins, you don't get the others. Because they're expanded. Kshatriyas are expanded from Brahmins. So the point is the ashram is the brahminical duty. Does that make sense? The occupation means, varna means your occupation, how you maintain yourself. Right? How does a Brahmin maintain himself? Deity worship, studying, teaching. That's all ashram activities. You understand? So, by studying the ashrams, you understand Brahminical Varna. If that's understood, then you can understand what's a Kshatriya, what's a Vaishya, what's a Shudra. Because it's like the ashram dharma is the first, you could say the first six chapters and the last chapter of Manasamhita. So that means seven chapters are dealing basically with ashram dharma and the philosophy of, you know, the Vedic culture and Krishna consciousness. So that's the major. Then, and going through all the four ashrams, that's for a Brahmin, but it's also for the Dvijas. But it's specifically for the Brahmin. Then you're going to have after that, from the 6th, 7th, 8th, 6th, 7th, and 8th, yeah, you're going to have, so three chapters, you're going to have what is Kshatriya Dharma. Right? In other words, the only thing that's different is because they'll follow all the ashram aspects of the Brahmin. You know? But they have to maintain law and order. They have to protect the people. So you must know the law system of the court system. You know, civil, criminal, and domestic law. You have to know that and how to apply it. Right? So then that's additional. But you see it's smaller. Then, at the end of explaining the Kshatriyas, then it gets down to Vaishyas, which would fit on one page. Right? They have to know all the values of the different things and gems and cloths and condiments and everything. They must know the languages. They must know, you know, how you say...
God, my honesty.
Like that. Yeah. Well, I mean, those are the character things. That will be of the ashram. I'm just saying of the Varna side. It's just they have to know a set certain kind of things, then they'll be successful in whatever they do. Because even if they're a farmer, they still have to buy jewels for their wife. They have to know jewels. They're still going to have servants. They have to know how to deal with that. So it's just you do business in one of them, but you have to know all the others anyway because it's your life. And then the Shudra, it comes down to serving the other three orders. Like that, you know, without grudging. And that's it. So it's two shlokas explain Shudra Dharma. I think it's about five or so explain the Vaishya Dharma. And then you have hundreds and hundreds of Kshatriya Dharma and thousands for the Brahminical. Because if the Brahminical is established, on that you get all the others. Right? Because ashram dharma of a Brahman is the ashram dharma of everybody. It's also the occupation of the Brahman. So now all you have to add to the formula is what is the occupation of the Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. Like that. Which is easy to understand if the other is understood. If it's not, if you can't understand the ashram dharma, you're not going to understand the Varna dharma. Right? Because if you can't protect the family, how can you protect the kingdom? If you can't respect Brahmins as a householder, how are you going to respect them as a king? You know, I'm saying if you don't have faith in the scriptures as a grihasta, how are you going to have it as a king? You know what I'm saying? If you can't have some detachment as a grihasta, how are you going to have it as a king? You know, if you can't be consider others and not yourself as a grihasta, you can't do it as a king. So does that make sense? So that's why the kings and the Vaishyas, they go to the Gurukul also to be trained in the same character and culture as the Brahmin. So Brahminical culture is the Vedic culture. Then how you make your money, if you make your money other than the Brahminical culture, then you're called a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Yeah. It's just, you know, Krishna and Sudama, they all go to school together. They have same training, everything like that. There's no difference. You know?
Do you see our society in the future also become like that?
They'll naturally come. Main thing is when devotees are able to just identify what they're doing, and it doesn't matter what you're doing for Krishna. then it's fine. You know, as soon as it's all right to be a woman and a Shudra, then you can establish Varnashram. But until those two are accepted, that they're bona fide methods of engaging in Krishna's service, you can't establish the full system. The Brahminical, we already have Ashram Dharma going on, you know, to some degree, like that, and the Brahminical going on, because that Prabhupada established that. But he was saying, when he says we need to establish Varnashram, that means adding in Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. Brahmins, he's already established.
They have to define how they maintain themselves. If you define it, then you will know what your duties are. And your
very life. Easy. It means you can figure out what you are at this stage in about, you know, 30 seconds. It's easy. It means ashram, are you married? Yes or no? Okay, if the answer is yes, you're a grihastha. If no, that means you're a brahmachari, possibly a vanaprastha sannyas. Right? If you're a student like that, then it would be brahmachari. If you've already been through the grihastha ashram, or that, it's the other. Right? So it's quite simple to figure that out. It's just as simple to figure out the varnas. But because of prestige, it's one of the most feared and left things. It's like this. Are you generating economics that is in that way somehow or another adding to society? Right? Are you giving in tax or charity? No. Are you an administrator who is overseeing and protecting and creating the environment for others? No. Are you studying and teaching and or doing puja and like this or and that's how you're maintaining yourself? Okay, so then that's it. If you're not doing those three, then you're a Shudra. It's that simple.
But that's a gross definition.
It's a gross definition, but that's where it starts from. Then what kind of Shudra, what kind of this, what kind of that? The point is the essence of a Brahma is he studies and teaches. The essence of a Kshatriya is he protects. The essence of a Vaishya is he generates economics and gives charity. And the essence of a Shudra is he assists the other three in doing that. It's that simple. Now, to protect, you have to have all these things. You have to have a kingdom, you have to have this, you have to have that, you have to have a fort, you have to have ministers, you have to have prime ambassador, you have to have a wife, you have to have priests, you have to have, you know, your taxes, you know, your duties, you know, your punishment. You have to have all that in place. You have to know the law, you have to know how to run the court. But all of that is based on that you're protecting your people. The Brahmin is studying and teaching. What scripture he's studying and teaching in, what particular aspect of application he has, that's a detail. A soldier is assisting a king, so he's a Shudra.
Shudra?
Yeah.
How can we have
it's that simple. The bureaucrats in the government are all Shudras. The managers of over towns and other things, that it's not their town, they don't get the tax, they're not doing it, they're not running it, they're Shudras. The official, you have the head of a village, then over 10 heads of village is one head, over 20 then there's another head, right? And then over, I think it goes back up to 10 again, then you have another head. Right, and these are all appointed. Those are all Shudras. Because they're working for someone else. Ramananda Rai, he's the governor of Madras, which means the whole of South India. He's a Shudra. Because it's not his kingdom. If it's your kingdom, you're a king. You're taking the tax, it's your tax. You're a king. You give tribute to the king above you. But if you organize that the tax collectors take the tax, they get their cut, you've collected, you get your cut, and then it goes to the king, you're a Shudra. You understand?
Whereas like the guy who makes the Brahmin trays of carved the deep is not a Brahmana.
Yeah. Yeah. Management is an art.
Only the Kshatriya is perfect.
Yeah. A Kshatriya is a Kshatriya because he protects. Not because he could go out and cut off someone's head. Like that. You hire people for that. Right? You know what I'm saying?
Otherwise the gundas will be shut.
Yeah, so it's like that.
It's because they don't fight.
Yeah. You might have a head gunda, he may have kind of that. He takes care of his people and he runs the religion of the group. Like that. But all the guys that go out and do all the dirty work, they're soldiers. And they're never, you have one mafia gang and another mafia gang. That a soldier in one mafia gang, he's killed someone over here, he's never to blame. And if later this guy goes down and they take over, they don't go after them. Because they didn't arrange it, they're just doing it as social. Now they just work for this guy. They're soldiers. The guys on top, they're the ones that ordered, organizing, they're getting the benefits, it's their scene, it's their business. They're the ones that are responsible. Like that. You have in a business, right? You go to Marks and Spencer's, right? They 10,000 people work in that one. The one down at the end of Oxford, past Regent, not the one next to Soho. 10,000 people work in there. Like that. There's, I think, there'll be a handful, two or three Vaishyas. Everybody else in that place, the sailors on the floor, the supervisors of the floor, the guys that go out and do the marketing, the guys that, you know, clean the bathrooms, the guys that fix all the electricity, they're all Shudras. Every last one of them. The guys that sit on this top and decide what's going to be bought and sold and all that, and it's their money, they're investing, those are the Vaishyas. That's it. A lot of Shudras are killed, but there were a lot of Kshatriyas there also. Means the proportion is this. This is the proportion. One chariot, which is a Kshatriya. One elephant, which is a Kshatriya. Then three horses, which will be Shudras. And five foot soldiers, which are Shudras. Right? So there's 10 people. Two are Kshatriyas. Eight are Shudras. That's your proportion. So 640 million people were killed. So that means, what is it called? 640. So that means 6.4 means 12.8 million Kshatriyas. And the rest were all Shudras. Yeah. Well, they can also be princes. They can also be in there. It's like Dhritarashtra is the king, but so many others are Kshatriyas because they have their area and like that. It doesn't mean that they were the ruling king. They were Kshatriyas. Dharmashastra makes a distinction between kings and Kshatriyas. All Kshatriyas means a king is always a Kshatriya, but a Kshatriya is not necessarily a king. Yeah. But they're the officers, the generals, like that, the ministers, like that. Yeah, Yudhishthira is the king, and his other brothers are Kshatriyas.
Right.
He's a king amongst Vaishyas. That's why when it said that Parasram went, and then the kings, means Prabhupada said the Kshatriyas fled to Europe, the Vaishyas fled to the Orient, and the Shudras went to Africa. So why would they be worried? He's only after Kshatriyas. Because the Kshatriyas are on the battlefield with their Shudras. So their Shudras ran off to Africa and they split to Europe. Right? And the Vaishyas means the Vaishya kings, because they had their armies and all that also. They fled to China. So you see, all these areas are very martial. It means, as far as I've heard, the only country in the world that's never gone outside of its borders to fight a fight is India. There's no need. This is their place. Everybody else, they all have this martial thing. They have to go out and conquer the world. All the African tribes, the Orientals, the Europeans, that's all they do is kill each other and take over, and then the next one kills out and takes, and that's all they do. Because this is all the riffraff that was left over after Parasaram went through, and they all ran out. They weren't, you know, the other ones stood there and got killed. These guys ran off, so they're the riffraff, you know. You know, does that make sense? That's why you see the Orientals are cutthroat businessmen. Right? The European, they're conquistadors. They got imperialists. They got to take over everywhere. you know, in the tribes, they, you know, they fight over their, you know, these are all foot, they're perfectly happy with, you know, their foot soldiering. You know what I'm saying? They're comfortable with that. Well, the Europeans got to figure out something to project weapons because they use bows and arrows and spears and ostras. There's got to be something going on about it. So it just reflects where their background is. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
So Brahmanas went with them also.
Can, would be. There would be some, but they would lose the culture. You know, like that.
Like degrees.
Yeah, they would lose.
Merlin?
Amongst their group, he would be their Brahmin. I mean, it's always within any group, you always have your division, anyway. You take the Nishadas, they do have their king, they do have their, you know, everybody's got their, right? Even you take the communists who have no, you know, then they have their Marx and their Lenin, their Tolstoy, like that, and then they have their Stalin, you know, and like that. Then they have the guys that are supposed to hold together their economics, didn't work so good, like that. And they got the Shudras. So their system doesn't work because it has Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Shudras, but no Vaishyas. Right? Chinese aren't so stupid. They have their Vaishyas because that's their stock. Like that. So they function communism with economics.
Now everything's made with China.
Yeah, yeah. Now they took over, right? Russia wanted to take over the world. They blew it. China is. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadeta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaurava Prema Nandi.